Chapter 72. I am well enough, says Mr. George. I hope you are the same. You can't be too well, my dear friend. Mr. Smallweed takes him by both hands. I have brought my granddaughter Judy. I couldn't keep her away. She longed so much to see you. She hears it calmly, mutters Mr. George. So we got a hackney cab, and put a chair in it, and just round the corner they lifted me out of the cab and into the chair, and carried me here, that I might see my dear friend in his own establishment. This, says Grandfather Smallweed, alluding to the bearer, who has been in danger of strangulation, and who withdraws adjusting his windpipe, is the driver of the cab. He has nothing extra. It is by agreement included in his fare. This person, the other bearer, we engaged in the street outside for a pint of beer, which is twopence. Judy, give the person twopence. I was not sure you had a workman of your own here, my dear friend, or we need have employed this person. Grandfather Smallweed refers to Phil with a glance of considerable terror, and a half-subdued oh lord. Oh, dear me. Nor in his apprehension, on the surface of things, without some reason, for Phil, who has never beheld the apparition in the black velvet cap before, has stopped short with a gun in his hand with much of the air of a dead shot intent on picking Mr. Smallweed off as an ugly old bird of the crow species. Judy, my child, says Grandfather Smallweed, give the person his twopence. It's a great deal for what he has done. The person, who is one of those extraordinary specimens of human fungus, that spring up spontaneously in the western streets of London, ready dressed in an old red jacket, with a mission for holding horses and calling coaches, received his twopence with anything but transport, tosses the money into the air, catches it overhanded, and retires. My dear Mr. George, says Grandfather Smallweed, would you be so kind as help to carry me to the fire? I am accustomed to a fire, and I am an old man, and I soon chill. Oh, dear me. His closing exclamation is jerked out of the venerable gentleman by the suddenness with which Mr. Squad, like a genie, catches him up, chair and all, and deposits him on the hearthstone. Oh Lord, says Mr. Smallweed, panting. Oh, dear me. Oh, my stars. My dear friend, your workman is very strong and very prompt. Oh Lord, he is very prompt. Judy, draw me back a little. I'm being scorched in the legs, which indeed is testified to the noses of all present by the smell of his worsted stockings. The gentle Judy, having backed her grandfather a little way from the fire, and having shaken him up as usual, and having released his overshadowed eye from its black velvet extinguisher, Mr. Smallweed again says, oh, dear me. Oh Lord. And looking about and meeting Mr. George's glance, again stretches out both hands. My dear friend. So happy in this meeting. And this is your establishment? It's a delightful place. It's a picture. You never find that anything goes off here accidentally, do you, my dear friend? Asks Grandfather Smallweed, very ill at ease. No, no. No fear of that. And your workman. Oh, dear me. He never lets anything off without meaning it, does he, my dear friend? He has never hurt anybody but himself, says Mr. George, smiling. But he might, you know. He seems to have hurt himself a good deal, and he might hurt somebody else, the old gentleman returns. He mightn't mean it or he even might. Mr. George, will you order him to leave his infernal firearms alone and go away? Obedient to a nod from the trooper, Phil retires, empty-handed, to the other end of the gallery. Mr. Smallweed, reassured, falls to rubbing his legs. And you're doing well, Mr. George, he says to the trooper, squarely standing faced about towards him with his broadsword in his hand. You are prospering, please the powers? Mr. George answers with a cool nod, adding, go on. You have not come to say that, I know. You are so sprightly, Mr. George, returns the venerable grandfather. You are such good company. Ha ha! Go on! says Mr. George. My dear friend, but that sword looks awful gleaming and sharp. It might cut somebody, by accident. It makes me shiver, Mr. George. Curse him, says the excellent old gentleman apart to Judy as the trooper takes a step or two away to lay it aside. He owes me money, and might think of paying off old scores in this murdering place. I wish your brimstone grandmother was here, and he'd shave her head off. Mr. George, returning, folds his arms, and looking down at the old man, sliding every moment lower and lower in his chair, says quietly, "Now for it." "Ho!" cries Mr. Smallweed, rubbing his hands with an artful chuckle. "Yes. Now for it." "Now for what, my dear friend?" "For a pipe," says Mr. George, who with great composure sets his chair in the chimney corner, takes his pipe from the grate, fills it and lights it, and falls to smoking peacefully. This tends to the discomfiture of Mr. Smallweed, who finds it so difficult to resume his object, whatever it may be, that he becomes exasperated, and secretly claws the air with an impotent vindictiveness expressive of an intense desire to tear and rend the visage of Mr. George. As the excellent old gentleman's nails are long and leaden, and his hands lean and venous, and his eyes green and watery, and, over and above this, as he continues, while he claws, to slide down in his chair, and to collapse into a shapeless bundle, he becomes such a ghastly spectacle, even in the accustomed eyes of Judy, that young virgin pounces at him with something more than the ardor of affection, and so shakes him up and pats, and pokes him in divers parts of his body, but particularly in that part which the science of self-defense would call his wind, that in his grievous distress he utters enforced sounds like a pavior's rammer. When Judy has by these means set him up again in his chair, with a white face and a frosty nose but still clawing, she stretches out her weazened forefinger, and gives Mr. George one poke in the back. The trooper raising his head, she makes another poke at her esteemed grandfather, and having thus brought them together, stares rigidly at the fire. I, ho, ho, you ugh, chatters Grandfather Smallweed, swallowing his rage. My dear friend, still clawing, I tell you what, says Mr. George. If you want to converse with me, you must speak out. I am one of the roughs, and I can't go about and about. I haven't the art to do it. I am not clever enough. It don't suit me. When you go winding round and round me, says the trooper, putting his pipe between his lips again, damn, if I don't feel as if I was being smothered. And he inflates his broad chest to its utmost extent, as if to assure himself that he is not smothered yet. If you have come to give me a friendly call, continues Mr. George, I am obliged to you. How are you? If you have come to see whether there's any property on the premises, look about you. You are welcome. If you want to out with something, out with it. The blooming Judy, without removing her gaze from the fire, gives her grandfather one ghostly poke. You see, it's her opinion too. And why the devil, that young woman won't sit down like a Christian, says Mr. George with his eyes musingly fixed on Judy, I can't comprehend. She keeps at my side to attend to me, sir, says Grandfather Smallweed. I am an old man, my dear Mr. George, and I need some attention. I can carry my ears. I am not a brimstone poll parrot snarling and looking unconsciously for the cushion, but I need attention, my dear friend. Well, returns the trooper, wheeling his chair to face the old man. Now then, my friend in the city, Mr. George, has done a little business with a pupil of yours. Has he? Says Mr. George. I am sorry to hear it. Yes, sir. Grandfather Smallweed rubs his legs. He is a fine young soldier now, Mr. George, by the name of Carstone. Friends came forward, and paid it all up, honorable. Did they? Returns Mr. George. Do you think your friend in the city would like a piece of advice? I think he would, my dear friend. From you. I advise him, then, to do no more business in that quarter. There's no more to be got by it. The young gentleman, to my knowledge, is brought to a dead halt. No, no, my dear friend. No, no, Mr. George. No, 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 sir, remonstrates Grandfather Smallweed, cunningly rubbing his spare legs. Not quite a dead halt, I think. He has good friends, and he is good for his pay, and he is good for the selling price of his commission, and he is good for his chance in a lawsuit, and he is good for his chance in a wife, and oh, do you know, Mr. George, I think my friend would consider the young gentleman good for something yet, says Grandfather Smallweed, turning up his velvet cap and scratching his ear like a monkey. Mr. George, who has put aside his pipe, and sits with an arm on his chair back, beats a tattoo on the ground with his right foot, as if he were not particularly pleased with the turn the conversation has taken. But to pass from one subject to another, resumes Mr. Smallweed. To promote the conversation, as a joker might say. To pass, Mr. George, from the ensign to the captain. What are you up to now? Asks Mr. George, pausing with a frown and stroking the recollection of his mustache. What captain? Our captain. The captain we know of. Captain Auden. Oh, that's it, is it? Says Mr. George with a low whistle as he sees both grandfather and granddaughter looking hard at him. You are there. Well, what about it? Come, I won't be smothered any more. Speak. My dear friend, returns the old man, I was applied duty, shake me up a little. I was applied to yesterday about the captain, and my opinion still is that the captain is not dead. Bosh! Observes Mr. George. What was your remark, my dear friend? Inquires the old man with his hand to his ear. Bosh! Oh! Says Grandfather Smallweed. Mr. George, of my opinion you can judge for yourself according to the questions asked of me, and the reasons given for asking them. Now, what do you think the lawyer making the inquiries wants? A job, says Mr. George. Nothing of the kind. Can't be a lawyer then, says Mr. George, folding his arms with an air of confirmed resolution. My dear friend, he is a lawyer, and a famous one. He wants to see some fragment in Captain Auden's writing. He don't want to keep it. He only wants to see it, and compare it with a writing in his possession. Well? Well, Mr. George. Happening to remember the advertisement concerning Captain Auden and any information that could be given respecting him, he looked it up, and came to me just as you did, my dear friend. Will you shake hands? So glad you came that day. I should have missed forming such a friendship if you hadn't come. Well, Mr. Smallweed? Says Mr. George again, after going through the ceremony with some stiffness. I had no such thing. I have nothing but his signature. Plague, pestilence and famine, battle, murder and sudden death upon him, says the old man, making a curse out of one of his few remembrances of a prayer, and squeezing up his velvet cap between his angry hands. I have half a million of his signatures, I think. But you, breathlessly recovering his mildness of speech as Judy readjusts the cap on his skittle ball of a head, you, my dear Mr. George, are likely to have some letter or paper that would suit the purpose. Anything would suit the purpose, written in the hand. Some writing in that hand, says the trooper, pondering. Maybe, I have. My dearest friend. Maybe, I have not. Oh, says Grandfather Smallweed, crestfallen. But if I had bushels of it, I would not show as much as would make a cartridge without knowing why. Sir, I have told you why. My dear Mr. George, I have told you why. Not enough, says the trooper, shaking his head. I must know more, and approve it. Then, will you come to the lawyer? My dear friend, will you come and see the gentleman? Urges Grandfather Smallweed, pulling out a lean old silver watch with hands like the leg of a skeleton. I told him it was probable I might call upon him between 10 and 11 this forenoon, and it's now half after 10. Will you come and see the gentleman, Mr. George? Come, says he gravely. I don't mind that. Though why this should concern you so much, I don't know. Everything concerns me that has a chance in it of bringing anything to light about him. Didn't he take us all in? Didn't he owe us immense sums, all around? Concern me? Who can anything about him concern more than me? Not, my dear friend, says Grandfather Smallweed, lowering his tone, that I want you to betray anything. Far from it. Are you ready to come, my dear friend? I'll come in a moment. I promise nothing, you know. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.